As Virgil mentioned in his comments, it's been a tough week for most of us, if not all of us. Carl was a great man, a good friend, and a very interesting character that will not soon be forgotten, never be forgotten. I was pulling into the parking lot, and I always park right next to Carl, and it just brought the tears back just to see that empty spot. I thought this morning, actually earlier in the week, about what I would preach on this week. I'm going to break the series that we are in the midst of on flesh and spirit, because I want to talk about comfort during a time like this. There's never a better time to preach a lesson on the comfort and peace and wonderful blessings of dying in the Lord than after one of our own has passed from the earth. And so I want to read verse 13 through and 14. I do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning those who have fallen asleep, lest you sorrow as others who have no hope. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so God will bring with him those who sleep in Jesus. In a couple of slides, I'm going to talk about the fact that there are two comforts here. The first comfort is for us, and the second comfort is the realization that they're in a better situation than they were. The sadness that we feel comes from two different sources. One is we can't talk to them anymore. The other is that the hard work and labor that they were doing is no longer going to be done. And it's a bitter thing to think about all the questions that Carl answered, the comments he made in class, the love and kindness that he often showed to us, and his powerful personality that sometimes would rebuke you and sometimes would disagree with you. He was a good man. And we need that comfort. But secondly, and I think more importantly, because those of us who love him, the anguish comes not so much from what we've lost as it does from what he might have lost. And that's what we want to talk about for a few moments this morning. Death for most people in the world means the end of everything, the loss of everything, the end of everything. But for the Christian, it doesn't mean any of those things. Paul said that there is a gain in death. He says that Jesus says, today you'll be with me in paradise. So there is a benefit in death. We don't lose anything. We don't end anything. It is a new beginning, and it is a wonderful opportunity. And the better we see that, the more comfort we're going to have, because that's what Paul says we should do with this information. We should comfort one another. First of all, in our own minds, and secondly, as we talk to each other. This is a subject we should be talking about. It's not something that we should avoid. We need to talk about these things. Some of us need more comforting than others. Some of us need to talk about these things. I called several of the brethren during the week because I wanted to give them a chance to talk about some of these things because they knew him well, and they were kind of left. We kind of left everybody hanging on Wednesday because we knew so little. And so we can comfort one another with these words. And I've been charged before that I'm preaching people into heaven or that I'm assuming things that aren't true. And I think that there's a passage that we need to look at, and specifically verse 7. But love suffers long and is kind. It does not envy. It does not parade itself. Is not puffed up. Does not behave rudely. Does not seek its own. Is not provoked. Thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. And as we look at these things, we check them off. Am I this? Am I impatient? Am I not kind? Am I not so long-suffering? Do I envy? But then in verse 7, he says that I have the right to believe all things and to hope all things. And so as I look at this, he was a good man. He was a faithful man. And if there's anyone these promises would apply to, it would be him. And we have the right to believe all things. How could we comfort one another if we're sitting around saying, well, maybe there was something we don't know about. Maybe we don't have the right to be comforted in this. That's no way for the Christian to live. if we're going to be wrong, let's find out on the judgment day, but let's put the best possible. And that's why when I preach a funeral and when I talk about brethren, I pick the highest things. And somebody wants to say, well, you don't really know that. Well, maybe I don't, but I love. And because of love, we have the right to believe the best possible outcome and the right to talk about the best possible outcome and to hope for the best possible outcome. God wants us to do that. He wants us to see in the death of the saints comfort, a hope and belief that Jesus will bring them along. And if we find out that we were wrong about one or two on the judgment day, so be it. That's not the critical thing. We're not like the denominations who are preaching people into heaven when there is no basis for it. They've never been baptized. They've never believed in God. They've never been faithful to God. And that certainly is wrong for people to talk about how God is going to receive such, because Jesus said, unless you believe that I am He, you will die in your sins. But when it comes to a faithful Christian, a man who was born in the heat of the battle for more than 40 years, a man who was transparent and open and expressed to you exactly how he felt. And so we have every right to be comforted and to take all of the promises of the scriptures and apply them to him. And I'm not ashamed of it, and I don't believe that we should question that at all. Because God doesn't want us to sorrow as others. He wants us to be comforted with these words. And there are many words of comfort that we can apply in the scriptures. We need to. Because I'm looking around in my office. I see the calendar he gave me. I walk around and I see where he sat and I remember his comments and tears start to flow and I need to think to myself. Jeannie put it best a few days ago. She said he wouldn't come back even if we asked him to. We'd like to have him back, but he is seeing things that we can't even imagine. He is experiencing things that we can't even imagine. And so we are going to consider some of those promises today. Now, as I mentioned a moment ago, one is for us and one is for him. If we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so God will bring with him those who sleep in Jesus. In other words, we're going to see them again. This isn't the end. He hasn't perished. If you believe in me, you will never see death and you will never die. We will see it, but he would not see it. And so we have this comfort. He's in a better place. How do you know he's in a better place? Because, like the people in Hebrews, we have a hope. We are not, this world is not our home. We are strangers and pilgrims here. And when one of our own goes home, we should rejoice for him, not for us. We'll never rejoice for us, but we can rejoice for him. This is not a permanent separation, a temporary separation. Like David said about his child, and he finally did, I shall go to him. He will not come back to me. So as we ponder these things, we need to look deeply within ourselves and assess our faith, assess our confidence in the scriptures that we talk about so often, and see whether or not these things actually comfort us. If we receive no comfort from these things, our faith is small. Our commitment. We sing, I'm standing on the promises, and there are no greater promises than the ones that we're going to look at this morning. And so Martha brings up another aspect of this when she says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But she's looking at it from her perspective. She's looking at it from her loss. She's looking at it from her expectations that Jesus can solve everything in this life. She's not looking at the fact that he's also going to solve everything in the life to come, that he has resolved these things and we move on to a better place. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. You'll see him again. This is for her. Martha said, I know he will rise in the resurrection at the last day. Now, Jesus' next words, which we save for a later slide, have to do with him, what he experienced and what he went through. Jesus told the thief on the cross, Well, actually, the thief on the cross said to him, Jesus, remember me when you come in your kingdom. I doubt that the thief had a real clear picture of what he was saying here. I don't know that he understood the kingdom and what it was referring to. But Jesus passed over that. His faith was enough. People say, well, how do you know he's baptized? Well, he wasn't under the law. He was under the law of Moses. The law of Christ doesn't start for another 50 days until the day of Pentecost comes. Secondly, how do you know he wasn't baptized? John the Baptist was baptizing, and it says all Jerusalem and all Galilee and all Samaria, or excuse me, and all Judea came to be baptized of him. But that's immaterial to this point. I always get troubled when Satan manages to get our attention away from what really matters in the verse by having to deal with false teaching about the verse. He does that with baptism. He does that with marriage. He does that with worship. But in verse 43, it says, truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise. What did Jesus mean by these words? Did he intend to come down and take the thief to a beautiful park? The term paradise in the Greek language meant a place of peace and comfort and serenity, like a beautiful park with water and grass and beautiful animals and a nice breeze and flowers and a wonderful fragrance, and just a place and a day where we are carefree and we are in peace and contentment. Is that what they did? No, they did not do that. They both died that very day. So how did Jesus keep this promise to him? Promises here. This very day, some translations say, today you will be with me in paradise. There's only one way to interpret this verse. This is an addition to what Jesus said about Abraham and Lazarus in Luke 16. In Luke 16, the angels came and carried him to Abraham's bosom where he is comforted. Now, Jesus talks about the comfort. He doesn't talk about the beauty of the place. He talks about the terrible nature of torment. I'm in anguish in this flame. Please have Lazarus bring water to cool the tip of my tongue. Now, I understand that's a parable, but parables never teach things that are not true. This is exactly what occurs at death. There's a separation, as Abraham tells him. There's a great gulf between us and no one can pass. My personal conviction is that after Adam and Eve sinned, not only did God create and bring death into the world, but he also made paradise. Now, I could be wrong. I could be wrong. But I don't know why he would need paradise and torment. He had to find a place to put those souls as they died. They couldn't come to him, so he made a place, a beautiful place. It's interesting that the same word God used for the Garden of Eden is used for the place where the souls of the righteous are going to be placed until the time that Jesus returns. And so we have every right, because he used that word, to expect that the place of paradise is going to be as beautiful or at least as comforting and peaceful as the Garden of Eden, which we were cast out of. And as I say, it's just an extension of his other words. Most assuredly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he shall never see death. First Virgil, and then myself and Jeannie and a few others were able to see Carl and death. It's a peaceful thing to me. It's an opportunity to say goodbye, but it's also a very difficult thing. We see death. We see the body. We feel it. He's not here. There's a hole in our heart. There's a hole in our lives that he filled, some more, some less. We see death, but when we die, we will not see death. Jesus says we will be introduced to angels, that we will be taken to paradise where, as Abraham told the thief, here he is comforted, you are tormented. Now, that happened to Carl. That happened to the thief on the cross. That happened to Jesus. How do I know it happened to Jesus? Because Peter said in Acts chapter 2, "You will not leave my soul in Hades. You will not allow thy Holy One to see corruption." The body did not corrupt. The soul came out of Hades, but it also went into Hades. When it went into Hades, that's where paradise is. Paradise is in Hades, so is torment. Where is it? I don't know. Paul says it's somewhere in the third heaven, which we'll talk about in just a few moments. But Jesus had already revealed that death is only seen by the living. Those who are dying, who are keeping his word, they don't see death. They fall asleep in this life. It's like an airplane journey. I get on a plane in Cincinnati or New York or wherever it is, Denver, fall asleep. Wake up, the plane is landing, and I'm in Hawaii, or I'm in Africa, or I'm in China, or I'm somewhere else. And I'm seeing things I've never seen before. Experiencing people that I've never met before. We understand an airplane trip, we understand a plane trip, even an automobile trip, but we don't quite understand this trip. Jesus said, "You will be with me in paradise. You're going to leave here, you're going to go to paradise." It's an experience like leaving this world on an airplane or a car or whatever. I don't know if it'll be quite like Elijah, but I think Elijah is a good explanation. He went to heaven in a fiery chariot. Where'd he go? Well, when he comes back with Moses, it's clear that they are both in paradise. So Carl is in paradise. And he is seeing people. People we long to see. I don't know how this works. We sing the song, "I'm going to invite the archangel as guest." I don't know whether we could invite the archangel as guest. I don't sing that part of the song because I don't know that I'm worthy to be in the presence of the archangel. I don't know if there's any archangels there. I hope to see Paul. So does everybody else. He's probably a very busy man. I don't know. I'm speaking a little bit facetiously here. Jeannie's mother says when she's going into surgery, "I'll either be having lunch here with you or I'll be having lunch with the Apostle Paul in paradise." And I like her thought. I like that reasoning, although again, I don't know how accurate it is. But Moses and Elijah are together. So they've met each other. They've talked to each other. And I don't know why everyone else wouldn't have the same opportunity. So, what is paradise? Well, Jesus often quoted from the Greek translation, and there's only one place in the Old Testament where the word is used, and that's the paradise of God, which is in the Garden of Eden. What God initially planted and gave to Adam and Eve as a place to tend is the same word. Now, I don't know what we should do with that. I don't know what we should do. All I know is this is a very pleasant word for a very pleasant place, and God has created that place for his righteous people who trusted him and who are going to be washed in the blood of his Son and now have been washed in the blood of his Son. One thing is certain, when Jesus told the thief where they would be that day, he used a word for a beautiful park-like setting. And Luke recorded that into the scriptures so that we would see that this is where all of us. And Paul said, "I also went there." He says, "I will come to visions and revelations 14 years ago, whether in the body I do not know or out of the body I do not know." I like this verse because we don't know. We know we can talk. The rich man is talking about his tongue. He's talking about water. He's talking about senses that he can feel. Paul said he heard things that were inexpressible. You can see, you can hear. Moses and Elijah are talking to Jesus in a language they certainly didn't die with. So they learned a different language. They knew things that they didn't know before they died because Moses didn't know anything about Jerusalem and he didn't know anything about the death of the Son of God because all he had was the books he had written, which record in Genesis through Deuteronomy that this son would bruise the head, that he would be from Abraham, that he would be a prophet like unto him, but the rest of it he had to learn while he was in paradise. So Paul says, "I don't know if I was in the body or out of the body," which means we won't know. It won't be that much different. "Caught up to the third heaven, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know, God knows. was caught up into paradise. That's where Jesus and the thief went. That's where Abraham and Lazarus are. That's where Carl has gone. He's caught up into paradise, heard inexpressible words, which it is not lawful for a man to utter. Wouldn't you love to know what those words were? Wouldn't you love to know what he saw? Well, he can't tell us what he saw, but he tells us how he felt. After he saw that, he never saw life, he never saw death, he never saw this world is not my home in the same light. He says, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. In Malawi, I talk to them about gain. I say, when you plant in the spring and you have more than you had at the end, you gained. If the rains don't come and you have less than you had when you began, you lost. The world sees death as a loss. Paul sees it. I will have more after death than I do now. What will he have? Again, God hasn't given us all the information, but he's certainly clear that death is gain. That's how Paul felt about it. Paul saw it. You remember what he said? Because of the exceeding greatness of the revelation, a thorn in the flesh was given to me. He saw some amazing things in paradise. He said, dying is gain. Then he says, but to live on in the flesh, this will mean fruit from my labor. What I shall choose, I cannot tell. Paul's love said, I wanted to stay. That's how Carl felt. That's how most of us feel. I'd like to go on for me, but not for Jeannie, not for my children, not for the church, not for those unknown people that I hope to have an opportunity to convert. I'm hard-pressed between the two. Having a lust, I wish the translators had gotten this word right. This is the same word Jesus uses in Matthew chapter 5. Whoever lusts upon a woman has committed adultery in his heart. And Paul says, I have a lust to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Some translations have very far better. No, Carl would not come back if we asked him to. Paul's perspective of death was molded by what he saw. This isn't faith, because he sees it. It's not hope. Remember in Romans he says, who hopes for what he has? Who hopes for what he sees? But if you hope for what you don't have. In Hebrews chapter 11 he said, or the Hebrew writer said, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Paul saw it. He knew. This was not simply faith, although for Paul, faith and sight were about the same thing. It didn't matter if God said it, he believed it. We haven't seen it. I don't know if we trust Paul in this or not. How do you feel about paradise? How do you feel about death? Can you say that you even closely feel like Paul, that it's very far better to die? And that there's only one reason to stay in this life, and that is so that we can be helpful to the people around us. You see the parallel here? It was the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom, where again it said that he is comforted. There's very little difference between Abraham's bosom. What is a bosom? What does that mean? You remember when the disciple whom Jesus loved was in the bosom of Jesus and Peter looked to him and said, would you please ask him what he means here? The bosom is not simply being held. It is a place of comfort. When a mother holds a child in her bosom, it means that that child is very much at peace and very comforted. And to make sure we don't misunderstand, he didn't tell the thief on the cross, which he could have, today you will be with me in Abraham's bosom. But he gives it a name that was never mentioned in the Old Testament. It's called Sheol, called Hades. When Enoch was taken because of his life, that's where he would have gone. Some people say, well, God took him directly into heaven, but Jesus hadn't died on the cross yet. I don't think there would be any place for him in heaven until after his sins were cleansed. Jesus was in Hades. Paul was caught up into paradise. And Jesus said this, concerning the resurrection of the dead, have you not read what was spoken to you by God, saying, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. These men are alive. Jacob's still alive. Abraham is still alive. Isaac is still alive. Where are they? They're in paradise. They're in Abraham's bosom, although it couldn't have been called that yet before Abraham got there. Don't know what the name of it. Maybe it wasn't named. So they were in Sheol, they were in Hades, they were in paradise, they were in Abraham's bosom, they were in a place of comfort and peace. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, embraced them, greeted them, and said, confessed, we are strangers and sojourners on this earth. Just like Paul and just like Jesus. Jesus knew, He was with God in the beginning. He understood that this life is just kind of a parenthesis. Now for us, the beginning is open-ended. But the end is like his. It continues on and on. God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. God is still the God of Carl. He's still the God of all of the other people that we knew and have gone on. Comfort one another, Paul says, with these words. Do they comfort us? There's no loss here, except for us. Let's not be too selfish. Let's at least rejoice that he's no longer walking by faith. He's walking by sight. And we're going to join him. It won't be long. It won't be very long till this short life shall end. Died and carried away by angels perfectly fits with Jesus' new teaching, which is, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he's going to keep living. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? Now, this sounds like a paradox, die and live in the same sentence, but we understand now that while the body dies, the spirit goes back to the God who gave it, and the spirit is eternal, and it does not suffer. And as Paul said, I don't know if I was in the body or out of the body. Whatever our spirit is, and we don't really understand it, God is a spirit, and he can think and feel and hear and understand, and everything that he has, everything we are is going with us when we leave here. Our memories, our emotions. Even the rich man could remember his brothers that were on the earth. He remembers. We will remember. And we'll be looking forward to meeting again when we go. When the angels come and carry, we're not seeing death. When we move to paradise, we're not seeing death. I don't know how long it takes. I've got this vision in my mind. I'm going to ask God to take me out, or the angels to take me out and show me all the stars up close. I doubt that I'll even care then, but right now it kind of gives me a little bit of a tickle to think about that, to think that maybe I could see all of the stars before I move on and glorify God for the amazing things that he's made. You may say he's crazy. He should get to paradise as quick as he could. Moses and Elijah, the more I study this, the more intriguing it becomes to me, and the more I can draw from it. First of all, Jesus changed. He transfigured. I don't think he transfigured into something different. I think he transfigured into what he is. I think this transfiguration, for a moment, gave Peter and James and John a glimpse of what we will see. You remember it says that they appeared in glory in verse 31. I think there was some kind of a reflection in the glory that Jesus was manifesting and the glory that they were portraying. You say, how do you know that? Well, I don't. But something like that happened. They saw the glory of Moses and Elijah, just like they saw the glory of Jesus. And they said, let's make three tabernacles. Let's put you all on the equal plane. Jesus, we see now, you're equal to Moses, you're equal to Elijah. We see how great you are. And God says, boy, did you get it wrong, Peter. This is my beloved son. You don't even try to put them on the same level. My son is so much higher than Moses and Elijah. Behold, two men talked with him who were Moses and Elijah. Moses died about 1900 years before, no, excuse me, it was 1450 years before Christ. About 3500 years ago now. But about 1400 years, and Elijah came along about maybe 500 years later. And yet here they are together. They didn't see death. The angels definitely took Elijah up to heaven. We don't know anything about Moses except God buried him after he died. And Michael the archangel had a contention with the devil over that body, which is another very intriguing thought. Who appeared? Well, wait a minute. Let's back up. Two men talking with him. What language were they talking? Moses spoke Hebrew. Elijah spoke Hebrew. Maybe Jesus spoke Hebrew as well. Or they may have spoke a heavenly language. When we die and we have to talk to somebody from a different language. Ever thought about this? How the prayers are all going up to God and they're all different languages and God can understand them all? And that just like before the flood, we're going to go back to that. There won't be any reason to divide up nations anymore. We'll all be of the same nation and we'll all speak the same language. Which we'll have to learn before we get there. Otherwise, who are we going to converse with? I can't talk to Paul in Greek. I can't talk to Moses in Hebrew. I have to learn something. God is going to make some kind of changes. We're going to be so much more than we are now. How do I know that? Because they appeared in glory. Now, I may not understand what it means, but I know what glory is. Glory means splendor, brightness, magnificence. It means something far, far, as Paul said, far better, very far better. Gain. Appearing in glory. Spoke of his decease, which he was about to accomplish in Jerusalem. Have you ever thought about how amazing that is, that God would send Moses and Elijah to talk to Jesus about his coming decease? They're still working for the Lord. They're still learning. They were already there, not only a place better, but the body is better. They're still men. They're still working for the Lord. They're still learning. Not a place where we just sit around waiting for the resurrection. It's not a place where, you know, we don't have a body. And as Paul said, I don't want to be unclothed. I want to be clothed upon. But at the same time, very far better than here. So as we conclude this lesson and as we consider these things, and by the way, this is not a funeral. We're going to have a service for Carl. We're going to be talking about Carl. This was simply an application using Carl as an illustration. Paul lost people along the way. Friends, co-workers. That's one of the things that really troubles me. You build up a congregation and you get all kinds of dependable people around you, and then all of a sudden, they're gone. And all that you counted on, Carl. Someone else is going to have to do it now. And more work for the rest of us. We have to pick up the slack. Pick up his contribution. Because we have work to do here. Pick up his answering of the Bible questions. Pick up his desire to build up the congregation, to go around and talk to people. We have to pick that up. Paul says, we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing. Yet the inward man is being renewed day by day by day. And of course, when it goes to paradise, it will be renewed and continue to be renewed. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Now, can we put the death of loved ones in here? I really think we can. Think they belong here. They're certainly an affliction. But for Paul, with comfort, with the realization of how much better it is for them, with the realization that he'll just have to pick up the slack. Which he never, never complained about. A far more exceeding and eternal way to glory. That's what he has now. That's what Carl has now. That's what I'm going to have when I die. That's what you're going to have when you die. I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed. Now, most of us think that's at heaven, but with Moses and Elijah appearing in glory, it seems like it's going to happen right away. While we do not look at the things which are seen, this is our problem right now. Those of us who are grieving exceedingly, like those who have no hope, we're not looking at the unseen. We're not realizing that this, well, how did Ecclesiastes put it? The day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. Now, that certainly wouldn't be true if you're not a Christian, but if you're a Christian, the better is the end of the thing than the beginning of the thing. I wouldn't want to go back and live my life again. I know I could mess it up a whole lot more than I did this time around. And I've got the Lord and I've got my knowledge. And I don't want to go back and change anything. Because the one thing I want to change may be the one thing that gave me the humility to become a Christian. So let's leave the past alone, forgetting what lies behind. Let's push on. God got us here. And I'd love to go back and fix this and change that. But I like where I am now, and I don't want to change anything because maybe that's the one thing that may not have gotten me here. We do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Every time we lose someone, both of my parents are dead. It was a shock to me. It's the first really, I lost a very good friend when I was 19, but between 19 and now, I've only lost a few people. But this one shook me to the core, losing my mother and father. And it forced me into a different mindset, a mindset that is more scriptural, a mindset that I'm going to die because I'm the next step, is what I was thinking. I was a teenager and I was watching my parents in middle age. And then I was middle age and I was watching my parents in old age. And now I'm in old age. Uh-oh. We all know what's next. And we have to make peace with that, brethren. And these kinds of things help us to make peace. They help. It's the end of all men. It's better to go to the house of mourning than the house of feasting. Why? Because it's the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. And sometimes the loss of acquaintances doesn't help as much as the loss of someone that was the biggest part of our life, a brother in Christ, a mother, father, husband, wife, children. So as we conclude this lesson, we've been talking about Carl because he's the subject of death at this time. But like I tell everybody at a funeral, what am I going to say about you? Or what are you going to say about me? Be able to talk in a good way? Have I done anything? Can we be like those widows that when Dorcas died? Weeping and crying. Why? Because she was a big part of their life. How big of a part of your life have you given to us so that we would say at your passing, we really lost something important? Some of us don't live that way. Some of us are living for ourselves and not much going to be said. And I might even be afraid to say, let's preach this sermon about going to heaven. Because maybe my life or your life isn't one that we can have a whole lot of confidence. And so as we sing the song of encouragement, I'd like for every one of us to think about that. What's the Lord going to say when you die? Will he send angels or will you just wake up in torment? You know. Some men's sins go on before. Some men follow after. But you know what they are. You know what you are. And so as we sing the song of invitation, give me thy heart. There's no more powerful time than when somebody we love has died and we have to ponder these things to make a decision. And I hope you will, if you need to, make the decision to finally be baptized into Christ, become a Christian, shoulder the heat of the day, or repent of your sins and confess them one to another. But before we leave it, I just want to say one more time, let's weep for ourselves, but let's rejoice for Carl. And let our faith grow and develop to the point where we can rejoice for him, because when we do, this world is not our home. And we really sing that song, "My treasure's laid up. They're all awaiting me, and that's one thing I know." Now we have one more who's waiting for us. If we can help you in any way, would you please make it known while we together stand and sing?